In recent years, the annual Prague Writers' Festival has done a lot to promote writing from North Africa and the Middle East here in the Czech Republic. This year was no exception, with the award-winning Algerian novelist Kamel Daoud and the Egyptian poet Mohamed Metwali prominent among the writers taking part. David Vaughan caught up with the latter to talk about his poetry, the complexities of writing in Egypt today, and the pleasures of Prague beer.
Mohamed Metwali is well known in Egypt both as a writer and a literary editor. As well as producing several collections of his own poetry, he has managed to publish many other Egyptian writers who otherwise would never have had a chance of finding a readership. He insists that politics and poetry do not mix, and that poetry is not a good tool for social change, but in a country that is in a state of political flux, politics is never far away. 5 years ago, the so-called Arab Spring took its name from the Prague Spring of 1968 and brought hopes for democratic change in Egypt. The Prague Spring was short-lived, followed by invasion and 2 decades of reaction and political suppression. So I began our conversation by asking Mohamed if he felt that the Arab Spring was going the same way.
It's very disappointing, completely frustrating. Because after the January 2011 uprising, people thought they're going to get their freedom back. They're going to be not under dictatorship anymore. And, of course, it was hijacked. They call it a revolution sometimes. It wasn't like a true revolution because it didn't have its theories like the French Revolution with Jean-Jacques Rousseau and the others, and it didn't bear fruit. So that's why let's agree to call it uprising. And there was a lot of hope back then. And then it was hijacked by the Muslim Brotherhood, which was like completely against the dreams of everybody who's not a jihadist. We suffered under the Brotherhood for a whole year, and there was another uprising when the army took over, supposedly to support the people against the Brotherhood, because everybody was calling for the army to intervene because they couldn't take a theocracy. Egypt has a unique nature. It could never be a theocracy like Israel or Pakistan or Iran or Saudi Arabia. And the Brotherhood were turning Egypt into a religious country. And it's against the nature of the people. So people didn't mind the intervention of the army because they thought the army will protect them. In the end, it turned out that the army took over. It's another dictatorship. And it's another frustration of the hopes. A lot of intellectuals have been put in jail, prisoners of conscience, a lot of people who are merely protesting in the street against the government have been put in jail or disappeared.
It makes me think, continuing with this analogy of Czechoslovakia and the Prague Spring, it makes me think of the period of normalization when so many people, particularly people working in the arts, writers, artists, people involved in theatre, suddenly found themselves being silenced. And I was wondering whether you feel that it's possibly a similar process.
It has some similarities. A lot of people now are afraid to speak out. People are afraid to protest because there is terrible laws restricting the protests anywhere. A lot of thinkers have been put in jail because of that. One of them is Islam al-Bahiri, who is a religious thinker who tried to renovate the religious ideology. Ahmed Nagy is another novelist who's been put in jail because of some pornography. And now the accusation is disparaging religion or blaspheming, which is very strange because we just got rid of the Islamists. And suddenly now the generals are making like a demonish pact with the Islamists to just silence them or to contain them by applying these laws that are anti-constitution. The constitution declares there should be no imprisonment for opinion, or for writing, for expressing, for speech. But now they don't want to activate the constitution, which is sad because there is a pact with the Islamists. And this is very sad.
I know that you don't like the term political writing, but is it actually possible as a poet not to be political in such a political situation? If the government, the regime, is making everything political, is it actually possible not to be?
Sometimes it's hard, and sometimes you resort to metaphor. And you listen to my poem, The Barbarians, today. In the background of my mind, I had, of course, the Islamists invading the city, the barbarians.
When the barbarians attacked the city, they only found a one-armed boy holding a big frog, which they confiscated, cooked its legs with breadcrumbs, then commanded it to jump. The boy laughed. They grew suspicious, so they searched him, and in his pocket they found 2 marbles. When you talk about talking in metaphor, is it the form of self-censorship?
It is not self-censorship, because I never wrote direct poetry, or I never wrote explicitly political poetry, and I'm against it. I mean, it's against my nature, so I don't find myself self-censoring. My propensities are all about artistic writing. It's not about politics, but politics could show up, like I said, in your subconscious, in the back of your mind, or in the form of a metaphor.
And I noticed in that poem, for example, you have the little boy who laughs at the people who pull the legs off the frog and then expect it to jump.
Yeah.
It's the emperor's new clothes, isn't it? It's this idea of the child seeing through the absurdity of those who have the power, and of that being dangerous, in a sense.
Yes. The child could be the Egyptian people.
And tell me about Prague.
It feels wonderful. They have wonderful beer. And the architecture is beautiful. The old city, it's just fascinating. The only problem here for me is that people don't smile a lot. So, especially to strangers.
That's a big problem. I mean,
there are a lot of smiling Czech friends here in the festival. They are lovely. One of them even gave me a hug. So, but if you walk in the street and you don't look Czech, or you're just walking and smiling at somebody, it's rare when they smile back. It's not like in the U.S. I used to live in the U.S. and you would say, good morning, hello, have a good day, sir. Take care. Everybody who doesn't know you would just tell you these things. In Egypt, too, they would just be smiling and cheerful. But here, I don't know about the majority of the people I met in the street. They just don't smile. But other than that, I'm enjoying my stay very much.
And can we expect some Prague poetry from you?
Well, it might happen, because these things will come up to you out of the blue after the experience is kind of digested.
You mentioned the poem about the barbarians. What about the other poem that we heard today?
The other poem was actually a fable, and it was called The First Sin, and it's kind of metaphorical. And there are a lot of characters who have some theological or historical references, things from the Bible, things from mythology. I like to write fables sometimes.
I lost my sons on the road when they were young. I gave the first a gift of a pocket watch. The second, I placed a charm around his neck, and the third, a map. The first son learned the upheaval of time, since he was a leader, and he led a tribe of dwarves up a mountain peak, in the countries that lie outside of history, to show them their god, using his watch as a compass. But he never learned the way back, so he disappeared from the mountains and the history books, and was made an example of debauchery in the holy books. As for the second, he saw his god in a charm. He cuddled it until he fell asleep, like someone cuddling a pillow instead of a lover. He was discovered by a well-known cartoonist, became rich out of modelling for caricatures, and now he cuddles a sack of gold and a famous pop star in his bed. As for his soul, it was lost on the road, and people say a few dwarves found it torn to shreds in countries mentioned in the holy books, As for the youngest, he kept reading people's hearts through his map. He sentenced many to death for high treason when their hearts lay outside the map. Some became mountains, which he climbed to become wiser, but the mountains quivered, and some became forests, where he learned poetry from the animal's mouth, but the animal devoured him with the wisdom of a poet. The rest became a sea which drowned him. Was I to blame for my gifts? You also used religious references and references to the Bible, the Quran, the story of Moses, for example.
Yes, of course, if these have any artistic or poetic use for me, I use them for the sake of art. I will resort always to religious references or biblical or even Quranic if they can make a poem stand. And I use them stripped from their traditional connotations.
And you're familiar with the process of translating from Arabic to English.
Yes.
And I know that you translate your poems together with your wife, who is a native English speaker. And you also translate from English
yes,
to Arabic.
I translated my wife's book, Gretchen McCullough, Three Stories from Cairo. It was a bilingual book.
How do you find that jump between the two languages?
This is the secret of the craft, I won't tell you. It is really a horrendous jump between the two languages. They just don't relate in any sense of the word to each other, and especially with poetry, I have to make the Arabic sound poetic. It has to sound like the original. If you read it in Arabic, you would think that there is an Arabic-speaking poet that wrote it. My target is to make it sound in Arabic as originally written in Arabic when I translate it.
What about the other direction, your poetry in English?
My poetry in English, I'm aided usually by a native speaker, and this time it is my wife, Gretchen McCullough, because of the idiom. She adjusts the idiomatic phrases for me because it's not my mother tongue in the end. She studied poetry before, so she's both good at literature and language, so I was lucky to get a translator who has both talents.
Mohamed Metwali, thank you very much indeed for talking to me at Radio Prague.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.